I'll try not to use your material. My name's Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 25th, 1981, and it's a privilege to be here. And I was looking at this getup as I was walking in. I mean, the church is beautiful, and you guys are just a wonderful group. And I was looking at this getup as I walked in, I felt like I should be wearing one of them hats, you know, like I'm the pontiff. You know, I love churches, and I went to AA meetings in churches, and I'm a member, thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I read somewhere in the big, when I was around 15 years sober, I was looking for more. I was looking for more. And I said they knew there was something more, something I hadn't got. That's what it says in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm free. And some guy, I was a member of AA, and some guy tapped me on the shoulder. You know, I'm not going to go through my first step and all the other stuff, but, you know, a lot of you guys know that what happened was I drank in order to get into AA. Some of us do that. And so every alcoholic has to have his last drink. And by the way, if you're counting, this is step four. So I'll probably mention that somewhere during this deal. So I drank until I drank everything away. I drank a wife away. I drank a kid away. I drank a house away. I drank myself esteem away. I drank me away. And on Christmas Day at 3 o'clock in the morning, I got down on my knees, and this is just happened to me. I'm just telling you my testimony, the truth. And there was some guy on TV. It was an evangelist and anything. And I got down on my knees and I said the sinner's prayer, accept Jesus into my life, and which was a big deal for a Jewish kid from New York. And a month later, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't had a drink since. And so that's how I came in, you know, and I got a sponsor, and I've had three sponsors in AA, and so in any event, I was about 15 years sober, and I was loving AA, and I was doing all the things that we're supposed to do in AA, I think, or I mean, you know, nobody does it perfectly, but there was something I wanted more, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, thesis, I knew there was something more, something I hadn't got, and you know, in parts in the big book, you know, if you're around long enough and life is tough, life is difficult, life is a humbling experience, it'll beat you up pretty good. You know, the way life works is like this. If you don't do it right, it beats the shit out of you. And if you don't get it right, you just live a life of quiet desperation until the day you die, and you can't understand because you got the cars, you got the deal, you got the whatever the heck you is you got, but you don't got it. And you know you don't got it, and you don't know how to get it, so you redouble your efforts to try to get more of the stuff, and the stuff don't work. And I'm an attorney. I represent a lot of rich people who are miserable. And we know a lot of people that are famous and miserable and everything like that, because that's not the deal. And, you know, some people are blessed somehow, not because they have brains or anything like that, because I had all the brains and all that sort of crap, but I didn't get it. Some people are just blessed by God to sort of, you know, get to a point in their life where they get so low, they get beaten down so hard. That's how we get a new perspective, according to the big book, by 1,000 forms of humiliation, final crushing of our self-sufficiency, that we get humble and we get teachable and we get reset. You know, like, you know, when your computer goes, have you guys figured out that 90% of the stuff that can be solved in your computer when it goes crazy is you just have to reboot it? Some of us just need to be rebooted. You know, it's very tough to reboot a selfish, self-centered, you know, alcoholic whose chief characteristic is defiance. But God knows how to reboot alcoholics, you know, and I got rebooted on Christmas morning. And so about 15 years sober, but once you get rebooted, what happens is, you know, I love what the Apostle Paul says, the way he puts it, there's like two people in me. You know, some guy said to me, he says, well, mate, I, you know, you might have a split personality. I said, I wish I could get it down to two, but you know, I mean, I'd be okay. But he said, there's like two things. There's one that wants to be the good guy and follow God, and there's one who wants to get laid, you know. And they're like in conflicts, you know, and we're all adults here, you know. And so the bottom line is that, well, somewhere around, and so what happens is after you get into AA, and, you know, you come in because of the drinking, because my life turned into a bottle, but after you've been in AA for a while, and you're not drinking, and you're still going nuts, and you got bad thoughts about yourself and other people, and every once in a while you think about committing suicide, drinking is out of the question, but blowing your brains out isn't such a bad deal, and you're thinking bad thoughts all the time about yourself and other people, and there's always a lot of thinking, a lot of feeling, a lot of crap going on, and you know it can't be alcohol because you haven't had a drink, and 6 months, 8 months, 15 years, whatever the hell it is, it's not alcohol, it's alcoholism. And then, you know, they say when the pupil's ready, the teacher appears, and you read things in the big book, sometimes when you're 3 or 4 years sober, because life beats you down, and at 3 o'clock in the morning you read something that you've been reading for like 3 years, and you've never seen it, and you say, man, that's the answer. And then you finally see where it says, men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, they're irritable, they're discontented, sober. That's the way we are sober. That's the alcoholism. Unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, it comes at once by taking a few drinks. And you realize that the drinking is not the problem. I drank because it was the solution to my problem. My problem is I'm an alcoholic, and if you're an alcoholic, you feel like shit sober. That's the problem. You feel like crap sober. Over any period of time, you know, Carl Menninger wrote a book in the 1930s. He said, alcoholics are men and women who have to destroy themselves. That's why you get any alcohol, drunk or sober, they're not doing this deal. Somehow, some way, they'll figure out how to blow $10 million and destroy themselves. You'll see movie stars. You'll see people that have everything you think you, if you had, you'd be okay, and they destroy themselves. And you start realizing that I drank because I could not stand myself sober. There was something that I just don't fit. You know, I mean, heard a guy once say once, and it's a perfect, it says, apparently whatever insulation the Lord gives people as they're coming down, you know, as I was going down the chute, you know, as I was going down the mass production line, whatever, you know, God was spraying the insulation, you know, shh, shh, shh. You know, somebody, as I was coming there, somebody said, God, and he looked up, and I went by, and that was the deal. I didn't get it. You know, people were like asking girls out, you know, people asking girls out to dance, people were talking to other groups, people were raising their hand in class, people were doing crap. It's not that I wasn't given certain talents, but it was just life was difficult for me. I just didn't, I never saw anybody who felt injustice more than I felt injustice. You know, I mean, I said, you know, you hear people say, well, you got to get in touch with your feelings. Let me tell you something. I was in touch with my feelings. Man, if anybody was in touch with their feelings, I was in touch with my feelings, and they were not good. Okay, they were not good feelings. They were feelings of self-pity, because if anything, I'm a self-pityaholic, you know, so... The bottom line is then you find out that after you get rid of the booze, you know, you drink the booze in order to feel better, because booze helps, it works, that's why I drank it. And then, you know, what happens is it turns on you. You drink because you feel depressed and you feel better, then it gets to the point where you drink it and you feel more depressed. But by the time you start drinking and things get worse and you decide to stop, then you can't stop. You're hooked on the booze, so you come in here because you think you have a drinking problem, then you stop the drinking, you get rid of the drinking, then you get back to the problem. You know, you're 3 years, you're 6 years, 9 years sober, but you're nuts. You're just lathering up in the shower, and all of a sudden you hear this voice, you're an asshole, you ought to be dead, you know, and you're looking around to see who's telling you that, and there ain't nobody there but you, you know, and, you know, where's that coming from? Like Venus, you know, and that's you're talking to you, that's you talking to you about you, telling you how you feel about you. So let me tell you something, when you're telling you, and that's when you hear yourself. Most of that chatter is going on all the time, like Muzak. That doesn't come from Venus. That's going on all the time, like Muzak. And let me tell you something. You got a little voice in you telling you that you're a piece of shit and you ought to die and you're never going to be okay. When that thing is going on, you tend not to make good choices in your life. And sometimes you don't even know what's happening. You see, you're all worried about the committee. You know, the 10,000 voices in your mind saying bad shit about yourself and other people. You ought to be worried about the executive. At least you're invited to the committee meetings. You know what I mean? You need to worry about the executive committee that's cooking up all sorts of shit about you. Deep down inside, you're not even invited to the meetings. So the bottom line is you get in that, you come in here, and you, after you get past the initial flourish of great feelings because of the fellowship and the whole bit, you get to some sort of point where you got the feelings, you got the alcoholism. And, you know, there's only so much stuff you can, and, you know, you want more. You want more. You see, you notice that there are people, I mean, I don't know whether I talked to them about the minors yet in this group, I probably will. You notice that there are people that have what you want, and it says if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you notice that there are people that have something more. You know what I mean? There are guys that are playing golf and then there are Tiger Woods. You know, there are guys playing golf and then there's Tiger Woods, you know? You notice that everybody's sober in AA. Nobody's drinking in here. But you notice that there are people in here that are whining and crying and sucking their thumb. There are people here that have complicated lives. There are people in here that are in touch with their feelings. And then there are people in here that seem to just always, they seem to feel good about themselves and they're just trying to help other people. And you say, what's that? What kind of drug is that son of a bitch taking? And usually they got like 20 or 30 years. So you got 20 or 30 months and you're trying to feel like they are now. And how does that deal work and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I started, so about 15 years sober, I got topped on the shoulder. And, you know, some guy said, you know, have you ever been to a Bible study? And I started, and at first I said, I'm a Jewish kid from New York. We don't go to Bible studies. I had forgotten what happened already, you know, when I first came to AA. And then I, because I was scared that my Aunt Joan would be mad at me. She had been dead for 10 years, but, you know. But I had been around AA long enough so that I knew that decisions based upon fear, especially fear of what you think other people are going to think about you, are probably not good decisions. But that's the way alcoholics, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious, and of true happiness will find none at all. And one of the things you learn as you go along about yourself, when you start seeing yourself clearly, you know, that in Dr. Bob, in the good old times, between 1935 and 1939, they didn't use the big book, they used 1 Corinthians 13. They used Sermon on the Mount, and they used the book of James. And in 1 Corinthians 13, it says, when I was a child, I spoke like a child. When I was a man, I put childish things away. We see through glass darkly. But soon, if we do this thing right, we focus on him, we will see ourselves the way he sees ourselves. We'll see the truth as to who we are. And what happens is, as you go along in life, if you start doing these things right, you develop some sort of, you get these chunks of insight into who you are and what you are and where you belong, what the deal is, and you start being able to get a gift of discernment of other people, which helps you be a good sponsor or anything, because you can get things, you can see things in them that they can't see in things, and you can start seeing things in yourself. So what happens is, I went along, I developed this sort of understanding. It happens slow. They call it inspirational thinking in the 11th step. It says we come to rely on it. It seems kind of weird at first, but we come to rely upon it. As you go along more and more, and you start, and I somehow realized that one of the consequences, you know, until you understand your consequences, there's a lot of consequences to alcoholism that have nothing to do with drinking. One of the consequences of alcoholism is that you worry a lot. Alcoholics are self-centered in the extreme, and they worry a lot about what other people think about them. That's what they do. You know, I have this thing I say, you know, I say it all the time. You know, alcoholics are people who tend to tell themselves all the time and sometimes say it out loud, I don't give a shit what other people think about me. That's a phrase that alcoholics use. They tell themselves, it's almost like a mantra. Well, I don't give a shit what they think about me. I don't give a shit what they think about me. I don't care what they think about me. I just don't give a crap what they care about me. But the bottom line is number one, people who really don't care what other people think about them don't keep on telling themselves they don't care what other people think about them, you know? And you know, that's the first thing you got to realize. And number two, you also have to realize that one of the reasons you drink is so you can get to the spot where you really don't care what other people think about you. That's the freedom of not worrying about the fear of other people's judgments. That's why we drink. When we stop drinking, we go right back into, what do they think about me? So what happens is, where other people make decisions, for instance, they decide, do I think this might be good for me? And then if they say, well, it might be good to try this, and then they do it, the way alcoholics make decisions, say, do I think this might be good for me? And they say yes, and then the next thing they say is, well, what will other people think? And if other people will laugh at them or something, they say, well, I'm not going to do it. So that's the way alcoholics make decisions. So it keeps them stuck. So even though the big book recommends, on several places, church membership, they encourage church membership, alcoholics start thinking about what, you know, well, People's Anonymous is going to think, and they say, no. I'm spiritual, not religious. I think church is bad. You know, I heard one guy say, you know, put down the Catholic Church, and I don't want people laughing at me in AA, so they don't do it. They don't grow. You understand? They don't go on, like the 11th step says. And the reason they don't go on is because they want to look cool, and they want other people to like them, and that's the consequences of being an alcoholic, and that keeps you as a child. In the 6th step, it says, this is the step that separates the men from the boys. That separates the men from the boys in here. You know, the boys are the ones that are not doing this and not going further because they're more worried about what other people think about them. And the men are willing to have the courage to step out and do what the big book says and where it's basically pointing you without fear of the judgment of even people in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, in any event, but I want to get into first of all, I'm going to do 3 minutes on how to do the 4-step. When I was first came to AA, you know, I used to, you know, do the mechanics of the 4-step. It's not really important. It's in the book. They have a chart. There's 4 lists. There's a list of resentments. There's a list of fears. There's a list of faults. And there's a list of, you know, problems we have associated with sexual and romantic relationships. It's there in the book. You know, you can lift it up. I can almost mark them for you. Say, put it all down on paper. There's a list. That's the way I did the 4-step. I did it according to the way the big book I'm not saying you gotta do it that way, that's the way I do it. That's our basic text. Some guy comes up to me, he says, will you sponsor me? I wanna do a four step, how do we do it? I say, here's the four lists in the book. First I ask him to find the four lists. They look at it and say, I can't find them. They get the chart, but they don't get the other three. I say, bring it to me. I show them where they are. I say, now go ahead and do it. And I figure if you're gonna do it, if you want what we have, and you're gonna do it, you might as well at least try the way they did in the first book. Then you can do Hazleton and all the other stuff. Write your life story, but at least try the way they do in the book. That doesn't necessarily mean that's a rule. That's just a personal predilection. You know, it has to do with following instructions. I think following instructions is a big deal. So, you know, I like the way they do the four step. That's the way I've done it all my life. That's the way I did it for me. And so that's the way I suggest other people at least try to do it. So that's all I'm going to say as far as the mechanics. Ask your sponsor. Go up to other people. You know, I can tell you this. If you're an alcoholic like me, you'll look for how to do the four step in the book, and it'll be a mystery. I went for months and months and months. How do you do it? How do you do it? I can't know how to do it. I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to do it. Because the truth of the matter is, when you don't want to do something, it's very hard to understand how to do it. Because it seems so difficult. I mean, I went through law school, Department of Honors in Mathematics, you know, PhD in Algebraic Topology. You know what I mean? I couldn't do a four step because it was too confusing to me. Too big a deal. You know what I mean? That's why my sponsor, when I showed him all my degrees on the wall, he said, you know, rectal thermometers have degrees. You know what they do with those. You know what I mean? So being smart can keep you away from doing the simple stuff in the program. Simple stuff like getting on your knees, praying to God, and stuff like that. Because you're thinking too much because you're so brilliant. So, you know, I went for months, but I want to tell you something. When things get bad enough, let me tell you something. When your life gets bad enough, you learn how to get on your knees. When your life gets bad enough, all of a sudden the chart will be apparent. And one day I was at a meeting saying my mantra, which I had been saying for months and months and much. I feel terrible. I feel horrible. I feel bad. Things are horrible. And I know I ought to do my fourth step. You know, if you listen to an alcoholic long enough, he'll actually confess as to what the problem is. He'll tell you what the problem is. He knows what the problem is. I know I have to work with other people. I know I have to do this. They're just not doing it. So I was going to meetings. I was whining and crying and saying what all my problem is and everything like that. And I said, I know I ought to do my fourth step. And one day I went to a meeting and I did my song, you know, my mantra. And some guy named Henry, who I'd never seen before, was sitting next to me. He says, why don't you go home tonight and pick up a pencil? Go home tonight. I said, go home, you know. People had been telling me how to do it, and the chart. Nobody had ever told me to pick up a pencil. You know, when my first sponsor came to see me, this is amazing, you know, the way these things work. It's so amazing. I mean, it's a God thing. He first came to see me in the hospital. You know, he looked at me, he told me his story. I mean, I was all set to tell him he had the wrong guy, he didn't understand, I wasn't. And he told me his story, and I started identifying him, and then he said this to me. This is what he said to me. I swear to God, I remember this like it was yesterday. He said, Russell, you don't have to drink anymore if you don't want to. I went, whoa. Whoa. It was like the most amazing thing I ever. I had people tell me I ought to stop drinking. I didn't understand that. I had people ask me, why do I drink? I had people tell me I was going to kill myself. I had never had any person, if they did, I didn't hear them say, you don't have to drink anymore if you don't want. They had never said those words. That was my problem. Nobody had ever put those words together. Well, I don't believe that. I think it was when the pupil's ready, the teacher appears, and you know that's what happened. And you know, so that's the deal. So he said that thing. So in any event, that guy that day at that time, I got to that point where God put that guy in my life, and he said the magic words to me. The magic word says, "Go home tonight and pick up a pencil." You know, sometimes alcoholics are so involved in the intellectual part of this program. They don't know about, like, picking up a pencil. You know, how do I do the four step? How do I do the four step? And the guy says, go home and pick up a pencil. You know, I can do that. I can do the pencil thing. So I went home that night, I picked up a pencil, I opened the book, I saw the chart, I started writing. Within 2 hours, I was done with my four step. Done. Probably the worst four step in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. Best one I could do that night. Only one I've ever done. You know, later on, a week later, I wrote a couple more things down, but that was basically it. Everything after that was a 10th step. Apparently it worked because I got 33 years. So I don't know, you know, and it took me an hour. It didn't take me 6 months. Didn't write the Great American Novel. You know, I was one of these alcoholics. They say, I don't resent anybody. I love anybody. By the time I was on my list, I had like 40 people on the list, you know. I had my cousin who never did anything wrong for me. She just had more money than me. And, she, you know, she was rich and spoiled, all that stuff, you know. had all that stuff. I got had stuff done. I'm not going to open my four-step because I want to talk about something else. I want to talk about not so much how to do the four-step. I want to talk about benefits. I want to talk about benefits and what it's going to do for you and what as a human being. Because I'm convinced if alcoholics somehow grasp the benefits of the four-step and understand. Now, I'm a lawyer. I get these people, they come into my office. And well, let me start off this way before I get into that. On this feelings thing. When I was about 20 years old, I was going to college. I was going out with this gal before the booze really got a hold of me. I was suffering as much. Listen, I was a stone alcoholic. You understand? I had the alcoholic thinking going 100%, but the booze hadn't gotten a hold of me yet. You know, just a little bit, okay? So, you know, but of course you don't realize you're thinking alcoholically because when you've always thought alcoholically, whatever that is, you don't realize you think alcoholically because as the big book says, our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. So the way I think, the way I see things seems normal to me. And I tend to hang out with people that see the world the way I see the world and talk the way I talk. The people I hang out with, they say things like, I don't give a shit what they say about me. I don't give a shit that they don't know who they're screwing with. They don't know what's going on. Why is this always happening? They say the same phrases, the same stuff, the same thinking, the same feelings. I hang out with those people. There are other people that don't talk like me and don't think like me. They're assholes. You understand? I spot them on the other side of the room. I can spot them, you know? I can spot my people and I can spot them. You know what I mean? They have no sense of humor, you know, they don't drink, all that sort of stuff, okay? So the bottom line is, but I don't know my thinking is screwed up because my thinking seems natural to me. In other words, like being right-handed, it's natural for me to use my right hand. It's natural for me to hate. It's natural for me to feel sorry for myself. It's natural for me to blame. It's natural to think that nobody will understand. You know, you just won't understand. You just don't understand. It's natural for me to say the things. I'm a yes butter, I'm an if onlyer, I'm a you don't understander, you know, that's the natural deal. Along with a million other things that are old ideas and old feelings that apparently the book says you gotta get rid of, or the result is nil, let you go out absolutely. But I don't even know they're old ideas, they're just the way they am, they're just the consequences of my alcoholism. They're the things that are gonna drag me back. You know, how do you get rid of those when you don't even know you have them? You don't know you have them because they're you. They're your person. I told my sponsors that. I said I got mad or angry. He says you've been. He says that's just my personality. And he said, Russ, it's your personality that's killing you. It's not the alcohol anymore. It's your personality. I can get rid of your personality when you love yourself, except for the times when you hate yourself. You know what I mean? I mean it's very confusing. Don't go by me. You know I'm still working this thing out. So I was about 20 years old or something. I went out with this gal named Lynn Benson. And Lynn, are you listening? She's not an ad. Where are you, Lynn? No, I was in love with Lynn, you know, and I've had that alky love, you know, alky love. Now they call it stalking, but anything. I don't know. Yeah, James is laughing. You don't know what it's like. But anyways, you know, alky love where you're always thinking about, you know, you go out on one date and you're thinking about married and the kids and, you know, you're stalking them, you're calling them, you're texting, you know, I didn't have text. You're always thinking that, you know, we want to go to University of Miami and I saw like every day, every hour, you're always thinking who she with, what she with, you get all jealous and everything. You know, the crazy kind of, it's like that intoxicating love that you don't know whether you feel good or you want to kill yourself. I mean, it's like a bad deal. You know, it's a tough deal. You know, whenever I have one of these guys that come to me and they fall in love while they're in AA, I say, well, here comes the pain. You know, and there comes the pain. But in any event, so I was in that life. So every day for a year, I was with this gal. I was with her, I mean, night and day. She was like my booze, you know what I mean? You know, if you're an alcoholic and you're a guy or a gal, you know, members of the opposite sex or, you know, romantic stuff, it's like booze to you. It's like a certain kind of booze, you know, it's just... You use it the same way as booze. It's not about love. We think it's love, but what it is, it's not love. It's not love. It's just using, it's a drug is what it is. It's a drug. And so it makes us feel better, just like booze makes us feel better. It makes us feel better. It makes us raise our self-esteem. It does what booze does. It makes us feel invincible. It makes us feel, you know, but it's basically, we can give a shit about the other person. It has to do with us. It's all us. It's all me, 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 me. It's all self-centered stuff. I'm not talking about you guys. I can tell you guys are loving, honest, beautiful. You have a special kind of alcoholism where you probably, I'm talking about me, you know, and, you know, the real sick alcoholic. So this is how I know. So after a year, she says to me, this is what she says. She says, it was around Christmas time. She said, she had come from New Jersey. She says, you know, my parents, who had been paying for her while she was down, she says, my parents would like me to come home for Christmas. And, you know, this is a girl I loved. I loved her, you know. I mean, I loved her with all my heart. She says she wanted to come home for Christmas. And in a nanosecond, like that, in a nanosecond, I'd been with her for a year. I had this rage. If you're an alcoholic, you know what rage is. I said, but what about me? But what about me? I could give a crap about her. I could give about her crap about her feelings. I give a crap about her parents. What about me? You know, you talk about being in touch with your feelings. My feelings were the only ones I was ever in touch with. You know what I mean? Let me tell you something. No matter what I said my motives were, no matter what I thought my motives were, you scratch the surface, it's all about me. Selfish, self-centered me. Well, I was a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous before I actually realized, you know, you can be told something intellectually, but you still don't get it. Until I really sunk in that selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the whole deal with our problem, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step on those toes of others. They retaliate, seemingly without provocation, and we realize that, you know, we're not only self-centered, we're willful, we're self-willed one right. We want what we want, we'll do anything. So even though she flew up there and she went to see with her parents, then I flew up there to interrupt everything, you know, because I want what I want when I want it. And that's what, you know, listen, that's just what alcoholics do. And they don't even realize there's a problem. And that has nothing to do with drinking. That has to do with thinking. And you can stop the drinking, but how are you going to stop the thinking? And along with the thinking comes the feelings. And let me tell you something, there ain't nobody in here who's ever felt bad or depressed where it wasn't preceded by a whole bunch of crazy thinking. That's the bottom line. And that was me. And so what happens is we must get rid of the selfishness. You can get rid of the booze, but how do you get rid of the selfishness? First of all, you don't even know you have it. You don't even know what it looks like. Because it all, you know what it looks like? It looks like you. You look in the mirror, it's you. And if people point to it, that selfishness, they say, what do you mean selfishness? That's me, that's my personality. You don't even know what's bad. You don't even see where it's bad. You don't even see where it's, you see where the alcohol becomes, you see where your life becomes unmanageable because of the drinking, because they arrest you. They arrest you for driving while drinking. They don't arrest you for driving while selfish. They don't arrest you, you know, they just don't do that. It causes other problems in your life. Sometimes over a period of time, they alienate people, marriages get destroyed, kids get destroyed, stuff happens, you don't even see it while it's happening. Well, why would you see it? That would be like you were giving a shit about other people's things. When all you think about yourself and your feelings, why would you care about what other people think or how they feel? We must get rid of this. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. Then they go through that whole thing that I went through last week about when sincerely took this position. We've got to stop playing God, sincerely taking this position. All sorts of remarkable things happen. You know, what happens is, he says, being all powerful, he gives us everything we need, and we stay close to him and perform his work well. We've got to stay close to him and perform his work well. You know, when we do that deal, he says, we stop caring about our little plans and designs. We start caring about other people. You know, we start losing fear. You know, we use fear today, tomorrow, the hereafter, we were reborn. That's our book. That's the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And here's the problem with the selfishness deal. Here's where I see the problem. The problem with being selfish and self-centered in my life, and this is what you don't realize, is when you're selfish and self-centered, and you don't even know you're selfish and self-centered, you see things askew. You don't see things the way they really are. All you do is think about yourself, even though you realize you're not, when you don't realize you're not thinking about yourself, you don't see people and events clearly. You think you see them clearly, you know, and what happens is you tend to take a lot of shit personally. Things that go on, like you're like in a traffic jam and there's 10,000 cars and we're all in the same jam and I'm saying, why is this always happening to me? And you believe it, and you have the feelings, and it's all about you. What about me? What's going to happen to me? And when that is the way you see things, and that's the way you are, it has to do with exactly what you see is going on in relationships, what's going on in the planet, and it affects your life greatly. It affects your life. Now, I have these guys. Now, I deal with that stuff all the time because I'm an attorney. So I do a lot of criminal work, a lot of divorce work, a lot of stuff like that. And so I constantly have people. I have a sign in my office that says, "The truth, you can't handle the truth," from the movie A Few Good Men. Because I have these guys that walk in my office. You know, it's being an attorney, especially when you're dealing with people stuff, like divorces or, you know, people being charged with crimes and stuff like that. When you're people, look, 80% of people that come in have some sort of addiction for something. You know what I mean? It's, something's going on. They're like us. So, you know, you see them come in, you see this stuff all over. So they come into me because they were arrested, because their wife filed a divorce, their husband filed a divorce, something happened, whatever, doesn't matter. They come in, they all have a story. They tell me the story. I listen to the story. They tell me this incredible story. The stories all sound the same. It's not my fault. I'm not to blame. You know, I didn't do it. It was the other guy's fault. I wouldn't have done it if she didn't do this. You know what I mean? Nobody understands. You know, they tell this great, fantastic story. Now, as they're telling the story, I can tell they're really putting their heart into it. They're very sincere about it, okay? Now, I realize that the story is total bullshit because I actually live on the planet Earth. You know what I mean? I actually live here. I've been an A for 33 years, and I understand it's bullshit. But you see, one of my jobs as an attorney to try to help them out, and as a human being, is I've got to get them, because they're living on planet, like there's Fred over there. Instead of being on planet Fred, I got to get them back down to planet Earth. Because I know if they tell that story to the judge, they're not going to jail. He's going to put them under the jail. You understand what I'm saying? It's going to be a bad day. So I got to get them off that story to the real story. Like, I'll ask them things like, "Well, let me ask something. That's a great story. Did you tell that story to the cops?" And they'll say, "Yeah, I told them the whole thing." I said, "And what did they do?" He says, "They arrested me." I said, "Listen, that's a good sign. That's a sign. You know what I mean? That's a sign. I don't think that story's going to fly." You know, and then I show my chart. The truth, you can't help. See, what happens is they've been delusionally, like us, operating in their own little world where they're never to blame. It's not their fault. Even if they did something, they wouldn't have done it if you didn't do something. There are all those little old ideas that we can't get rid of because they're deeply ingrained. They've been operating in that world, and they've been operating quite nicely. You know, they made $1 million. They live in a beautiful community. They're driving a Rolls Royce. It doesn't matter. How could there be something wrong with them? Because life is treating them okay. Their kids hate them. Their wife is divorcing them. You know, they got a million other things going on. But that's not their fault. They're all a bunch of assholes. Whatever it is, they figured out in their life has not become unmanageable yet, okay? And the bottom line is, all of a sudden, and they've never gone to anybody to talk about anything, because why should they talk about anything? They have no problem. And all of a sudden, the indictment comes down. All of a sudden, the bankruptcy comes. All of a sudden, the divorce papers come. And all of a sudden, they run smack dab into reality, which is what God sets up for you if you don't get the deal. He sets up something called reality. You know what I mean? And the cops come, or the wife, or the husband come, or somebody comes, and you get into reality. Or it's cancer, or it's a health problem, whatever it is. You know, and the bottom, and it's amazing how alcoholics can get hit by these things and still not see it. Right? I mean, it's amazing. You know, money, if you got a lot of money, it can stop you from seeing a lot of stuff before it, you know, even though it's happening to you. But the bottom line is, all of a sudden they've got to the point where they've got something they've got to deal with that's made their life unmanageable, and then they come in to see me. And some of them actually start getting it. They start getting, you know, that maybe they should look at it a little bit differently. Maybe there's a different way of looking at things. You know, for us, you know, one of the things we have to get rid of is the old ideas. And one of the things I really needed to get, and my sponsor was really good at this. This is tough for alcoholics, because alcoholics think they're so smart, and I know I thought I was so smart. Don't we all think that we're just smarter than anybody else? Don't we, especially when it comes to us? I mean, nobody knows me like I know me. How could you know me? How could you tell me about it? You take your own inventory. You know, you work your own firm. I work my firm. You don't know me. You couldn't understand. How could you understand me? You can't understand how I've always tried. If you knew how many times I tried to make the things right and do the right thing and I got screwed because somebody else did this or somebody else did this, you'd understand that I don't drink because I have a drinking problem. I drink, I drink because I have problems. And as a matter of fact, my drinking perfectly matches my problems, and pretty soon my problems are going to go away, and I won't have to drink anymore, so thank you very much for your advice, but why don't you go screw yourself? I mean, you don't understand. I mean, we are so filled with an idea that you don't understand. Nobody can ever understand. Why would I bother talking to anybody? They couldn't understand unless they knew everything about me. There's so many nuances, and I'm so different, and I'm so unique, you know? I'm different. That's the flag of the alcoholic. I'm different. You know, I mean, that's my deal. And I'm, like, stuck. And how am I going to get out? I don't even see where my problems are or what the truth is. And the bottom line is one of the things my sponsor used to say to me over and over again, in every single way he treated me, was he used to, you know, I graduated law school. I graduated all, I had all these degrees. You know, obviously I thought I was smart. You know, I didn't think I, you know, no matter what I thought about myself, no matter how badly... I think every alcoholic has something they can point to, whether it's money, a car, whatever, a gal, whatever it is. They can say, well, I can't be so bad. Look, I got this, I got that, or whatever it is. He used to say to me all the time, he says, you know, Russ, your best thinking got you in here. He would never, it's like every sponsor, every mentor I've ever had, always, even though I knew they loved me, were fond of giving me a shot to solo, some sort. He used to call me counselor, but he didn't say counselor. He'd say, how you doing, counselor? You know, it was like with a sneer, you know? I mean, it seems like all the old times I hung around with sort of like were sort of like giving me a shot saying, you know, you're not as smart as you think you are. You know, you're not so smart, counselor. You know, they sort of somehow let me know with a certain amount of love over a period of time, they take me down a notch. And you know something? I needed that. You know what it says in the book? The way we get a new perspective is by 1,000 forms of what?
Humiliation.
And the final question of our self-sufficiency. Don't tell me humiliation is bad. I mean, that's how I got, you know why I'm an A? Because I was humiliated. When I was riding high and riding the crest and had the money in the bank, believe me, I wasn't saying, gee, I wonder where what's going on in AA tonight, you know? You know, 99% of the good of the things that I did in this deal, which helped me out, I would never done except I was humiliated, or a sponsor humiliated or told me to do it, and then all of a sudden I liked it, it worked for me, and then I started thinking it was my idea. You know what I mean? It was somebody else's idea that humiliate, you know, and if you're not teachable, and believe me, I got some sort of ego, and you know, we like to think we got good egos. I don't have a good ego, I have a bad ego. You know, we like to think, well, we're egotistic. We're not ego. It's when you feel like a piece of crap all the time, and deep down inside you feel like you're a nothing. You know what I mean? You act like you're a something. You tell yourself you don't give a crap and everything like that, but it's really because of a poor ego, not an unhealthy ego. And so that's the bottom. And one of the things that happens is when you're selfish and self-centered, and you don't see things right, somehow you have to bring the world into focus. I have to bring the world, sponsors will help you bring the world. I got to somehow see things maybe a little bit differently. I want to tell you a story. I want to tell you a true story about myself. When I was going to undergraduate school at Miami, I met this beautiful gal. Man, I'll tell you, she was all legs. And she was absolutely gorgeous. And I knew, you know, alcoholics are like this. You know, I mean, I don't know, maybe regular people are like this, but alcoholics, I think, are more so. I knew if I could marry her, I'd be okay. She came from a great family. She was gorgeous. She was smart. She had a great smile. I said, man, if I could marry this gal, my life would be perfect. You know, I can say things like, oh, man, if I could have that car, my life would be great. Oh, if I could have that job. Oh, if I can only make, I don't know, 40 grand a year, I'd never have a problem. Oh, if I can only do, if only I could live in California, you know, if I could only lose 10 pounds, if I can only, you know, if only, a life full of if onlys, if only that things would be perfect, nothing ever, it works for like a nanosecond and then it's gone. And I knew if I married her, I'd be okay. And I was in love, you know, that alky love, you know. And in love with the idea of being married, in love with the idea of having some gal on my arm like this, you know. And you know, I got that gal, you know. We're good at getting what we want. Believe me, she had what I wanted, and I was willing to go to any length to get it. Believe me. Don't tell me I can't do it. You can do this program, you know what I mean? You can do this program. stuff you can do if you really want it bad enough. And I got her to marry me. It was a beautiful wedding. We had a beautiful wedding. She had a beautiful family. You know, we settled down. I bought a beautiful house. You know, I was working for the DA's office. We had a beautiful child. You know, everything was going perfect. I had everything I needed, you know, in my life, you know, that would be perfect. Except, and I had a great job, and it was a high-pressure job, and I was a prosecutor and everything like that, and I ran around with cops and prosecutors, and I became a division chief, was handling murder cases, everything like that, and you know, like it's like a closed sort of deal. Nobody really understands what's really going on, unless you, these guys went to the bar, you know, it's like in TV shows, they went to the bar, everybody knows your name, all the cops, all the DAs went to the bar, and we drank, and all the gals were there, And I never cheated on my wife. You understand? I mean, I wanted to, but I didn't. You understand? And what happened is, you know, the problem. You know what the problem was? She just didn't understand me. I mean, this is the truth. She didn't understand. She didn't understand. She didn't appreciate me. You know what I mean? You know, I just got a little bored. I mean, I would invite her. She'd be at home with my son. She'd be like cooking dinner. You know what I mean? You know, and she want, and I'd say, why don't you come out to the bars? You know, I'd invite her to drink with my friends, and she'd say, you ready for this? These guys were the salt of the earth. These were my drinking buddies. You understand? Nobody understood me. They understood me more than my wife understood me. They understand, and, you know, and I'd invite her to drink, and she'd say, I don't want to drink with those bums. She'd call my drinking buddies bums. I mean, we were obviously growing in different directions. And one, you know, And that's what happened. She said to me one morning, she said, if you come home drunk one time, I'm leaving you. And I went to the bar and I said to one of my drinking buddies at 4:30, I said, you know, I've got to go home because Ronnie says, I come home drunk one time, she's leaving you. And he put his arm around me, you know, because he loved me, he really cared about me. He said, Russ, she's never going to leave you. He says, you're a great guy. How would she ever leave you? You're the greatest, man. And I'm thinking, well, that's pretty much true, you know what I mean? That's sort of in my narrative, you know? And so I had, but I said, no, I got it's 4:30, so I had one drink, whack, it was a double scotch neat, and I looked up at the clock, it was 4:30:30, so I was only 15 minutes away, so I had another drink. Next thing I know, they're pouring me into my living room at 4 o'clock in the morning, because that's where I drank. I drank from 4 o'clock in the afternoon to 4 o'clock in the morning. 12 hours, I mean, I could be in a bar for 12 hours, it seemed like 12 seconds to me. I would be in a bar, I would get in the bar at 4:30, and I would drink until 6:30, 2 hours, and I'd call my wife and I'd say, look, I just got to the bar, because for me, 2 hours was like just getting there, you know what I mean? And she'd say, well, come home because, you know, I got the food on or something like that, and say, I'll be home shortly, and then she'd get another call, and I'd say, I'm out the door, and I'd be out the door someplace else, and she'd never see me again. And that, but you see, the bottom line is what the truth is, and I'm saying, here's it, the fact is that she didn't appreciate my deal. We were growing in different directions. She knew I was a drinker before I got married. She knew I was a drinker before I got married. She knew what I did. She knew I hung out with the cops, and I did this, and I did that, and now she's trying to change me. And it wasn't working. You understand what I'm saying? It's not like I was changing or I was different. I was, this is the way I am, and this is the way I am, and she wanted to be home, and I wanted to be there, and I was bored there, and I was inviting her to come along with me and drink with me, and she didn't want to drink with me, and I had obviously married young, and, you know, that's the deal. And so, finally, I got kicked out of the house, and, you know, that's what happened, and as I'm walking away, I'm saying, I'm free, man, I'm free, because, and if you ask me, while I'm walking away from my wife, my child, I would have told you and believed it. This is my story. I would have believed it. I said, you don't understand. We're going in different directions. We're different people. You know what I mean? Got married real young. We're really into different situations. I'm a good guy. I'm going to pay my child. I'm going to do all that and all. And I would have believed that deal. Okay? And that's just that's my story. And that's the truth. She was just a different person. And I was a different person, and we maybe probably shouldn't have gotten married in the first place. We were too young, we were growing in different directions, and that's the absolute truth. Nobody to blame. So I got another story for you. I'll tell you another story. Let me story about a gal who got married, and she took the marriage vow seriously. And a guy who got married who didn't give a flying fuck. And give a shit. He got married only because it was all about him. And he thought that if he had this gal and he had this life and everything like that, he'd be okay. And you want something? You got married, and guess what? It didn't fix him. Now, he didn't know it didn't fix him. All he knew is that he wanted to go out with other women, because he would hang out with the guys at the bars, and he would see these other gals, and they'd look good. And he was married, and he felt bad about being married. He'd rather be screwing around and drinking. You know, but he didn't have the guts to go ahead and screw around with other women. He just didn't have. So what he did was he kept on drinking and drinking and acting out so badly so that she would be forced to kick him out, so he could, in a gutless way, say, it's not my fault she kicked me out of the house. And the real story was, is this guy had no integrity. He was a whore. You understand? He didn't give a shit who he hurt. He didn't care if he hurt his son, ripped his son's heart out, that five-year-old son out, heart out. He didn't care if he hurt his wife. He didn't care about anything because he had no integrity, and his commitment and his loyalty meant nothing. And it didn't matter that he was a lawyer and he had a three-piece suit. He was a bum. Because you know who acts that way irresponsibly, without integrity, letting down people and disappointing people and not coming home? Because what she wanted was she wanted a husband who respected the vows and showed up at 7 o'clock at night after work to sit there with her and her son and their son, and I was not that guy. And I was a bum. And so we went to the marriage counselor because she wanted to try to make the thing right. You know, I felt like Godfather 3, you know, the part where Al Pacino says, I got out of there pulling me back, you know, and I was already making my getaway to the bar. I said, I'm free, you know. Free. I was never free not to go to the bars. And, you know, the marriage counselor says, my wife, she says, so what are the three things you want to change about Russell? She said three things. I don't even know what she said. I knew this was bad. She was dragging me back in again. This was not a good thing. She said, what are the three things you want to change about Russell? And she said, A, B, and C. And he turned to me and says, what are the three things you want to change about Ronnie? And I said, I just want to date other women. And that was the end of that session. I'm saying, what are you crying for? What are you crying for? What did I do? What did I do? Because, what are you shaking your head for, Rachel? Give it up, you know? Just in case you should think that I'm like a nice guy. Don't you like people who say I'm spiritual, not religious? Well, you might be spiritual alcoholics. I'm your basic asshole. I'm an alcoholic. I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. Anything you see in me that doesn't seem selfish or self-centered, anything you see in me that's attractive or decent is not me at all. It's the God of my understanding reflecting in me through my personality. You should have seen me before God got into the picture. You wouldn't have liked me so much. I didn't like me so much, to tell you the truth. The two stories. Two stories. You know, for years, I thought the first story was the right story. We were just different people growing in different directions. You understand? I thought that was the right story. I could swear that was the right story. I didn't even see the other story. You know, ever since I've done the four step, and even after that, because you learn more and more and more, you see more and more, I've lived with the second story. Now, I don't know which one is the truth. I tend to think the second story is more of the truth. Now, let me ask you something. Who would you rather hang out with as a friend? The guy who believes in the first story or the guy who believes in the second story? Who would you rather be, the first story guy or the second story guy? Who do you think has more integrity? Who do you think has more honesty? The first story guy or the second story guy? Who would you go into partnership with? The first story guy or the second story guy? Who would you commit your life to if you're going to marry somebody, the first story guy or the second story guy? Who do you think you can trust with your money, trust with your life, the first story guy or the second story guy? You need to find your second story. You need to find your second story. You don't want to die or go through this life on the first story. And you know, I'm just telling you a story because of my alcoholism, the first story, having to do with my marriage and my marriage breaking up. You know, because of my selfishness and my self-centeredness and how I saw myself. You know, what about all the other stories, all the other people, all the other deals in my life? My whole life, my whole first story, my whole life was a fiction. My whole life was a self-centered fiction, thinking the world was this way when it was really that way, and feeling sorry for myself, you know, or taking things personally when I wasn't even getting it. I wasn't even getting the deal. I wasn't even getting it right. And that's one of the reasons, that's one of the things that And I'm not saying it's all the fourth step. The fourth step is part of it. And then we go into the fifth step. All this stuff, including what happens to you when the Spirit of God enters into your life and you start changing and transforming. Isn't that what it says? God's doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. We begin to lose fear of people and of economic insecurity. All of a sudden we see things differently. We see where all of a sudden, no matter how far we've done, where we can help people. It's all sorts of inspirational thinking. All this transformation happens because God is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves, but not without our cooperation. You know, it's not enough just to put the plug in the jug and say, then I'm going to be wonderful. You put the plug in the jug and then you're going to be terrible. You put the plug in the jug and then you're going to be the way you were before you stopped drinking. Start drinking. I mean, you may not get DUIs. Doesn't mean you're going to be able to hold the marriage together. You know, it doesn't mean you're going to be a decent person. You know, I mean, and so I have to do all this other stuff. So the fourth step is one of the first times, like it says in the book, where I get down to the cause and conditions where I have a shot. And I wish I could say to you, and I can't. It's no big deal that I did my fourth step and everything became clear. You know it doesn't work that way. I did my fourth step and like 5% of what I'm talking to you about now became clear. You know, I'm talking to you now 33 years sober. After looking back on my life and all the things I've done in my life, even after I got sober and working four steps and 10 steps where things are clear. And you know something? I absolutely know as I'm sitting here today that there are still a lot of things unclear to me. I'll learn more every day. I'll go to my deathbed with stuff unclear to me. Okay, but I'm clearer about life. I'm clearer about you. I'm clearer about me. And you know, when you get clearer about that deal, you learn to live life like a loose garment. You know, it's like the Apostle Paul says, it says, I learned to be content in all things. In this world, you'll have problems. But you have cheer. I've overcome. You find you don't step in the potholes anymore. You know, you don't run into burning houses. You don't hook up with people who are dragging you down, basement people. You don't place yourselves in positions. You know, Bill Wilson said that the next step was emotional sobriety. That was the next frontier. It says, our real problem is that we have unhealthy dependencies. You know, dependencies on unhealthy people, unhealthy things. You find that all of a sudden you don't make pacts and get into relationships and situations that are unhealthy. And you learn how to recognize when a situation is unhealthy. You know, when you're living in your own self-centered dream world, you have a tendency to make friends with your worst enemy and thinking they're the best thing. You just link up with crazy people, you know? And then when your sponsor says, well, why don't you leave? Or you say, I can't. You find yourself trapped in the crazy situations. You're like paralyzed. This is all a matter of crazy alcoholic thinking. And the fourth step is absolutely instrumental in getting down to cause and condition, then bringing it to other people, where at least you have a shot at seeing that you're crazy. Sober, that you're crazy sober. You know? So that's a little bit on the fourth step. Next week we'll talk about step five. Thank you.